Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric Zorn is here, everybody.
We're singing his praises.
We're singing his praises, as we've been asked to do.
Cut it out and let's talk.
All right.
There's enough singing.
All right.
Too much singing.
I want to start out with, now you know this is gonna make people angry. The case.
I hate to do that. You know how I hate to do that?
For impeaching President Donald Trump.
Oh, this column did make people angry.
I know.
You're right. I got a lot of emails and Twitter. People are hassling me on Twitter.
What is their main complaint with that discussion?
Well, what's interesting to me is how many of the letters that I got from people. I mean, essentially, I'll lay out what I said in the column, which is I think there's some excellent reasons for not impeaching Trump. Because it's like it's going to, first of all, you'll never get him out of office. The Republicans will never vote to convict him in the Senate. So impeachment and removal are different things, but mm-hmm. I think we lump them all together into one act. Impeachment is futile in that sense that, you know, Trump's going to be there. Until,
he's not going to give up his post.
Well, he's not going to give it up, but he's not going to be ousted. He's there so that it's futile in a way. And the public doesn't seem to have really that much of an appetite for it. The polls show support for impeachment in the 30s, which is even lower than support for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
The opposition to Trump is still substantial. It's in the 50s. But people don't want impeachment. So you've got that. And so then there's this idea that, well, if they do that, it's going to throw the Democrats off their game. But the Democrats need to talk about health care, the economy, the immigration, things mm-hmm. like that. They shouldn't be talking about, you know, Russian interference mm-hmm. in the election and Trump's obstruction of justice and so on. I mean, there's reasons not to do this. The case that I make is that you really, like, given all the evidence there is against Trump that he obstructed justice, and Mueller lays this out, I mean, like 10 examples of when Trump obstructed the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
These were arguably criminal acts, and he could not, Mueller felt that he could not indict the president because of Justice Department rules. And I think it is up to the Democrats in Congress to pursue this. Even though it might be politically disadvantageous to them, even though it might backfire on them politically, this is why we have impeachment. This is their job, and to outsource it to the voters, to say, well, in a year and a half, we're going to have an election, so it'll be up to the voters to decide on Trump. That's not what our system calls for. Our system calls for when there's evidence like this. And if you want any suggestion of this, go back and listen to what the Republicans were saying when they impeached Bill Clinton back in the 90s, back in 1998. They were saying exactly the same sort of thing about, you know, the dignity of the office, the offenses that he committed, and this isn't right, and so on. I mean, Lindsey Graham is a great example. He was carrying on about the need to impeach Clinton, and now he's a staunch defender of Trump when Trump's offenses, alleged offenses by Mueller are much greater. This is what Congress should do, is my argument. What interested me about the response to this on Twitter and in my email was how many people just said, why are you saying this? Trump did nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it echoes the early spin on this report that was put out by Attorney General William Barr. His early statements where he really emphasize the exoneration of Trump, emphasize there's no big deal here, there's not enough to prosecute here, all the things that Barr said that actually weren't reflected in the report. And I don't blame people for not having, I haven't read the entire report. I've read a lot about the report, and I've read excerpts from the report. I haven't read the whole, it's a long thing.
It's so big.
It's so long.
It's like three phone books.
But I'm getting the sense that people have, not only have they not read much about the report, they haven't read broadly about the report. They haven't read other sources other than Fox News. Although there's this, I want to read you this quote. This is from Judge Napolitano,
mm-hmm.
who's one of the commentators on Fox. And he says, you know, when the president asked his former deputy national security advisor, KT McFarland, to write an untruthful letter to the file, knowing the government would subpoena it, that's obstruction of justice. When the president asked Corey Lewandowski, his former campaign manager, to get Mueller fired, that's obstruction of justice. When the president asked his then White House counsel to get Mueller fired and then lie about it, that's obstruction of justice. Again, this is Judge Andrew Napolitano, Fox commentator. When he asked Don McGahn to go back to the special counsel and change his testimony, that's obstruction of justice. When he dangled a pardon in front of Michael Cohen in order to keep Cohen from testifying against him, that's obstruction of justice. This is a Fox News commentator. He was a judge. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that he's necessarily the final word, and there are obviously other commentators on Fox who say something else. But again, I get the argument that people will say, well, this isn't enough to impeach him. This isn't enough to put the country through this. I understand that argument. What I don't understand is this argument people are putting forward that says he did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
That I don't understand. And to me, it suggests that the spin is working, that the big lie that they put out there, that he did absolutely nothing wrong.
Right.
Is taking root, and that's frightening to me. That's more frightening to me than people who don't really care. I mean, I can see people saying, you know what, the economy's going okay, and I like the conservative judges and justices he's putting in here. I'm fine with Trump, and yeah, he's not very polished, and yeah, there's some things about him.
But we're almost finished with it too. The term's almost over. Almost.
It's really not though. I mean, if you think about it, he's just. Halfway mark was January, yeah. 2 months ago.
I guess.
Yeah. So we still have a lot of time to go. Yeah. They're not going to get rid of him. I mean, you're absolutely, to imply that is correct, Wendy, which is like, we're not getting rid of him. He's around for the next 18 months. It's 18 months until the election,
yeah.
Basically. It's another 3 months, 2 months after that?
The election's in November.
January
20th.
So he's going to be around for at least 20 more months, barring anything really unforeseen.
Right.
So I guess, you know, in some ways, I understand that argument, too, which is like, hey, you know, the country doesn't want this. So yeah. It could backfire politically on the Democrats, and it would distract them from the campaign they need to run. On the other hand, given how much this argument about Trump that says that he did nothing wrong seems to have seeped in to people.
Yeah.
I feel like the Democrats need to pursue it also for that reason. To open up. An inquiry into impeachment, to conduct an investigation that would be part of that.
They're yeah. still not going to believe it, fans and supporters.
There's going to be stuff that's going to come out that pursuing that investigation, I think, is important. I think it's important for them to keep looking at what he has done with his charitable foundation, with, you know, all his financial dealings, all the other things that he's got his hands involved in.
Sure.
That I think it's really important for the Democrats to keep looking at that, to keep that focus on. I think it's possible, as they say, to walk and chew gum at the same time. I think that they can continue to try to advance their legislative agenda, which will fail because they don't have the Senate and they don't have the president. So they can talk all they want now, Democrats, about, you know, free college for all or whatever they want, whatever they want to talk about. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that they can promote those messages in the campaign. They can talk about what they want to do in health care. They can talk about what they want to do with student loan debt. They can talk about what they want to do with immigration. At the same time, they can talk about why President Trump is unfit to be in office.
But nearly all of the Democratic hopefuls, now we're over 20 at this point, they all say the same thing, that we're not going to attack Trump. Our stance is going to be why we're better for the country, why we can help the country more. Joe Biden came in with the exact opposite.
Right, I was going to say, all of Joe Biden, yeah.
I'm going to attack Trump. I'm going to say, we at all costs, we need to get this guy out of office. That's his stance. So which stance is the right stance going into the next election?
I think you can do both. Yeah. I think that case needs to continue to be made. We're talking about trying to persuade a fairly narrow segment of the voting public, which is, you know, somewhere, you know, between the 40-yard lines, as they say in football metaphors, which is, you know, Trump has about 40% of the country just locked up. Mm-hmm. The Republican Party is on board with him to numbers that you haven't even seen. So I read something this morning that at this point in his presidency, Obama was supported by 80% of Democrats. They thought he was doing a good job. Trump's up over 90% among Republicans right now. That the Republican Party has become the party of Trump. And so, but the Republican Party is not the majority. The Democrats are not the majority. You get this swing voters, these people in the middle, who are saying, well, you know, yeah, he's a buffoon and an oaf and a narcissist and he tweets stupid things, but ...
But he's our buffoon and our narcissist.
Well, you know, but the economy's doing well, but I like what his judges are doing.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that he's deregulating business. I mean, there are things that Trump, there's an op-ed in this morning's Tribune about this where someone talks about how the Never Trump movement in the Republican Party, remember there's a whole bunch of Republicans who are like, we were the Never Trumpers, and they've just disappeared. They don't exist anymore in that party. And the writer of this op-ed talks about, well, the reason is that he is promoting a lot of Republican values while in his nutty way.
Yeah.
He's advancing things that the Republican Party tends to believe in, with the exception of the trade wars that he's...
Are evangelicals as two-faced as we're being led to believe at this point?
Well, you know, the evangelicals, it's very transactional, right? They are getting the kind of judges they want at the Supreme Court. They are, feel like they're advancing. They've got their eyes, you know, on the horizon.
Yeah.
And they're saying, okay, well, yes, this guy's, you know, an adulterous, profane pig, but...
But he's our adulterous, profane pig.
But he's appointing judges and justices who are going to help advance the conservative evangelical position. And so they say, well, you know, it's better that than Hillary Clinton or Pete Buttigieg or any of these other people who might be coming forward in it. And so, yeah, I mean, have they sold their soul to that? I guess they have, yeah. You'd like to see them at least, like people like Franklin Graham, you'd like to hear them at least standing up a little bit for this, because you know they criticize Democrats up and down for years for their moral failings,
right?
And you know the vast moral failings of Donald Trump.
Look the other way.
Boys will be boys, you know, because they're getting what they want. So,
yeah,
it's transactional. You can't say that they're the only interest group in the world that's transactional like that,
right?
I'm thinking about following up with this column, because I did. You know, the column that I wrote for Sunday about this, I didn't really lay out the case against Trump because I felt like people knew that already.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wrong. They don't know that. They're like, well, you don't really explain. You certainly didn't persuade me because you obviously have no reasons why he should. You're just saying he's a bad guy. I said, well, I should have used.
But you'd have to spend 24 hours a day purposely avoiding all sorts of news to not know his story, wouldn't you? How could you not know?
No, or you're in a certain bubble, right? You're paying attention to the cheerleading channel, which, you know, Fox News tends to just cheerlead for him. So,
yeah.
But there's a, you know, it's this story that we were just talking about, well, let me hold that story for after the break.
All right, let's do that. We'll talk more with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune next. It's Bill Left and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. Eric Zorn is our guest from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, we should really discuss what's going on in Springfield, because there's a lot going on.
We should. It's really interesting. For the next 5 weeks, the legislature is back in session, and they are running a sprint to the finish line on a whole bunch of initiatives that Governor Pritzker promised and hinted at during the campaign that he wanted to do. And the big one, the big ask, is to pass it's for graduated income tax, and we have a flat state income tax,
yeah.
And this would make graduated rates so that the wealthy would pay more. And to do that, you have to need a constitutional amendment. So the legislature has to pass it by two-thirds majority, or is it three-fifths? It's a supermajority they have to pass. And then the voters have to pass by a three-fifths majority. Pritzker's definitely for this. This is the big thing that he campaigned on.
Yeah.
This is a huge initiative for him. And you've seen ads on TV, I assume, you know, the
Illinois,
the big
fair.
Illinois people and the other people, the Illinois is not fair. And,
right.
And so this is a big battle going on. It tends to break down right on party lines, but if he can get this through, that doesn't end the game at all, because it has to go to the voters, and that doesn't happen until November 2020. So it's a long time before we have that. But there are a number of other initiatives that he wants to push through. The big ones are, one is the legalization of marijuana, for recreational marijuana, and that has, you know, that has a lot of traction. For people, you hear people talk about, oh yeah, I'm in favor of that, and just about all the mayoral candidates were in favor of it, and it's it's sort of the progressive thing to do. But there's been a number of people on both sides of the aisle who want to tap the brakes on that, who are saying, wait a minute, this may not be the greatest idea in the world. And they look at the experience in places like Colorado and California, and they think, are we ready for this? Is this what we want? There's problems with things like, how do you tell if someone is driving when they're high? Because you can't
do a blood test.
Well, you have to do a blood test. And
yeah, but that could be in your system, you know.
Wendy's exactly right. Wendy's right that, you know. So I mean, you remember the stories. You probably all heard stories about people who have to take drug tests for jobs.
Yeah.
And if you had smoked pot like within 2 weeks or something like that, it's going to show up in your blood
positive.
Test. So I remember one woman applying to the Tribune drank like Gatorade for like 24 hours.
Oh.
All she did, and she worked. She got the job.
Oh.
And she's not there anymore. But anyway,
it's hard to figure that out if you're currently high.
Well, we both. Well, what do you think about this, Wendy? The legalization of recreational marijuana.
I think it should be legalized. I think there are more problems with alcohol, and I think, you know, you need to be responsible.
Well, Bill?
I'm against it.
Yeah, see, we all have kids around the same age, you know, sort of late teens, early 20s, right?
Yeah.
And I I kind of think, well, yeah, legalization. But then I think, what would I think if I heard that, like, any one of my kids was smoking every day? Would I be happy about that? Would I be?
What if they were drinking every day?
If they were drinking every day, like, say if they're having a glass of wine every day. I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm closer to Bill on this. I'm just like, I'm really skeptical about it, and it goes against my politics in general to feel that way. But I just have this feeling like, I don't know if this is going to be a great thing. I don't know if I want pot shops on every corner. I don't know.
Right.
I just don't know how I feel about that. Why are you against it? Same.
A bunch of reasons. I see it as a big gateway drug. I really do.
Yeah.
I think alcohol is a gateway drug, too. And, you know, I don't smoke pot, but I think alcohol is a bigger problem.
It definitely is a bigger problem because it's the way it's used, right? But and of course, the other one,
abuse in any of them.
The other one, that, Bill, you probably have an opinion on, too, is sports betting.
Yeah.
And really, and this expansion of gaming that they're talking about. And again, you know, there are people who have real problems with gambling and it can ruin families, and I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea of basing our entire revenue model on essentially the fact
that
you can make a lot of people are going to be weak, and a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money. Maybe people who can't afford it,
right?
Who need to buy groceries and stuff for their family.
Yes. On the other hand, you know, I feel like why does the government get in there and say, you know, you want to bet $50 on the Rams over the, you know, Seahawks? You can't do it,
right?
Like, why would the government get in its way there?
Because the government wasn't getting a piece of it until now.
Right.
All of a sudden they can benefit.
Is that really what it is?
Well, there's, and there's all kinds of issues about question, like the NFL, MLB, those places, they want a piece of the action. They hear betting on our games.
Right.
People will bet on anything, right? The next pitch, a ball or a strike, you know?
Yeah.
And so they are providing the product that people are betting on. My answer to that is, well, come on. How many people are watching NFL games on the weekend, games which they have no actual rooting interest because they've got a fantasy team or they've got money on the game or something like that? They don't have any emotional
interest.
But
in both of those instances, in both marijuana and in gambling, the government was against it and you could potentially be arrested for it until they figured out we can get a piece of it. Now it's not so
bad. Now it's okay.
Feel free to smoke up. Feel free to bet on anything because now we're getting a little percentage of it.
Right. Right.
It's just them giving in.
Right. Right. It is. And some other things going on in Springfield. They're looking to add a 5 cent per bag tax on plastic bags.
Yeah.
Now, there's already a 7 cent tax in
Not
Chicago.
The suburbs, because I'm pretty confused when I am down at Ulta downtown and it's like, would you like a bag? And I'm like, yeah. It's 7 cents. And is that okay? I don't care.
Right.
But it shocks me.
You're an extremely wealthy radio personality.
It really, I kind of forgot all about it.
And they want to add 32 cents a pack, jeez, increase in cigarette taxes. They want to...
They should. The more expensive cigarettes are, hopefully the more people will try and quit.
I mean, there's all kinds of line item revenue things. The Tribune spelled it out in a pretty good story yesterday. And we're talking about things in the sort of, you know, $50 million to $200 million range, each one of them. And that's just how they're going to balance the budget. Each one of these things, the Democrats, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts going on
there.
And the thing that's going, that Pritzker and the Democrats may be able to use is infrastructure.
Yeah.
Capital bill.
Yeah.
Roads, bridges. They can start doling out those goodies and they can maybe pull some votes over. So it's going to be a great thing to watch. I'll update you next week. How's
Would
that?
Would you update us next week, Eric?
Promise.
That'll be fun.
Thank you, Eric.
Eric Zorn will be back 1 week from now with an update. Thanks, Eric.
Good
Have a great week. We'll be back with more stuff.